Howard Zinn. I never thought a Jewish guy from the lower part of my city would impact my life so much. I grew up in a household where being a member of the NAACP was important, and learning about Jewish and Black, Jewish people and Black people working together was an important part of the dialogue. Learning about the earlier times when people lived close by one another, poor whites and poor Blacks and others, was important in my development. But as I grew older, I saw less and less of that, and segregation seemed to be the order of the day in my world and the world that I saw around me. So learning about Howard Zinn really was critical for my development. So much so that I wanted to do a service about him in part and a few other things. So let me share some thoughts. So Howard Zinn, historian, author, professor, playwright, and activist. His life's work focused on a wide range of issues, including race, class, war, and history, and he touched the lives of countless peoples. He shared truth like few others in America, as I understand it, and I think America will never be the same without his works or his kind of human being. Let's go back and talk about a little bit of Zinn's earlier life. He was born on August 24, 1922, and Howard Zinn, as I alluded to, grew up in the city of New York. His parents were Jewish immigrants. His parents met as factory workers. His father was also a ditch digger and a window cleaner during the Depression. Like many people, not just Jamaicans, you got to have more than one job. His father and mother also ran a candy store for a brief time. They barely were getting by. For many years, his father was in the waiters' union and worked as a waiter for weddings and bar mitzvahs, always trying to make a little extra money. Howard Zinn was fond of saying, "We moved a lot, one step ahead of the landlord." Zinn recalled, "I lived in all of Brooklyn's best slums." The Zinn household was poor, and Howard grew up in a home bereft of books. At some point, his parents realized that their son was really bright and he needed some books. And they realized that he had never heard of Charles Dickens. I'm sorry you don't like Dickens. Well, nevertheless, the New York Post at that time ran a special. If you sent in a dime each month, you would get one of 20 volumes of Dickens' works. The family was thrilled, and so was Howard. Howard was an avid reader, and he went on to engage himself in readings about fascism in Europe. He read about the Nazi terror, and he was engaged in political discussions and debates with many young people, particularly the young communists in his neighborhood. These friends of Howard invited him to a rally in Times Square. It was a rally that was sponsored by the Communist Party. Despite it being a peaceful rally, mounted police charged the rally, and Zinn was hit. He was knocked unconscious. He described the experience as a turning point in his life. From that moment on, he said, "I was no longer a liberal, a believer in the self-correcting character of the American democracy." From that point forward, he said, the situation, as he understood it, required not just a new president or new laws, but an uprooting of the old order, an introduction to a new society, a cooperative and peaceful egalitarian state. Sad to say, he didn't live to see that come, but high ideals nonetheless. Zinn continued his avid reading and figuring out ways to understand the world about him. He engaged the Communist Manifesto, the Jungle, and the Grapes of Wrath. Zinn was well on his way to being a card-carrying member, right? He graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School and became an apprentice ship fitter in the old Brooklyn Navy Yard. He and a few other apprentices met to discuss the books that they were reading and to strategize about how to improve life for themselves and for their union members. Unfortunately, the apprentices found out they were excluded from union membership. It was sad, but they weren't held back for long. They started the Apprentice Association. As Zinn later explained in liner notes to his book, to one of his books, Fellow Workers, he said, "Before I became a college professor, I was a shipyard worker. Before I was a writer, I was a warehouse worker. But whatever I did, I was always a member of a labor union. I think the only job I had where I couldn't join a union was when I was a bombardier in the Air Force." He said, "It might have been a good idea if we had had a union. Maybe we would have gotten together and asked the question, why are we dropping so many bombs on these peaceful villages?" Zinn, not to be just an academic or an activist, found love in his life. He had his first date with his soon-to-be wife, Rosalind Schlechter, also from Brooklyn. They had this date on a midnight boat tour that he organized to raise money for his association. Rosalind shared Howard's progressive views. She was also a child of immigrants and understood what he was going after. The war years were upon us, and Zinn, like many Americans, wanted to do his part. He joined the Air Force. Just before he was set off to sea, overseas, Zinn and Rosalind married. Zinn became an Army Air Corps fighter pilot, and in 1943, the war with the fascists was at a high point. While in the Air Force, he was disturbed by the race and class inequality among servicemen. It's a funny thing, the United States Army is lauded for being the most race-neutral place in the United States. You've had more blacks and Latinos rise the ranks of the Army than any other institution in the United States, somehow forming this notion that the Army is not race-based. Having served in the Navy, I know the Navy was never such a thing. Anyway, it wasn't until years after the war was over, victory won by the West, right, that Zinn started to question the necessity of bombs. By the end of the war years, after the war, Zinn arrives back in New York, and he deposits the medal that he received. He was a decorated serviceman. He deposits the medal he received in a large manila envelope and seals it, and he writes on it, "Never again." He said, he went on to say, I would not deny that World War II had a certain moral core, but that made it easier for Americans henceforth to treat all wars with a kind of glow. He said, "Every enemy becomes Hitler to the American people." Some years later, he would look back at his role in dropping the bombs, these bombs that we call jelly gasoline, better known as napalm. He says, he wondered what a French seaside town had done to deserve it. His involvement in the war, he felt, was unnecessary. and it affected him for the rest of his life. He said, I participated in a terrible act. It's what informed his lifelong anti-war views. Now, back to the love story. Zin and Rosalind are married and they're working hard. And in 1944, they were living in a rat-infested basement apartment in Lower Manhattan. Their daughter, Myla, was born shortly after, and then their son, Jeff. And they moved into a project, a new public housing facility in 1949. Imagine that. Projects weren't for Negroes and Latinos back then. You all live long enough to remember when projects were white folks were living in the projects? Yeah, projects weren't for colored folks. In fact, colored folks had a hard time getting into them, if you really study the history. While the Zins were living in their tough times, as he said, they were doing back-breaking work. Rosalind was working as a loader in a warehouse. Even though she had the two children, she'd do that in the overnight hours when Howard was home. Howard was going to school and working. First, he earned his BA at New York University and his master's degree and his doctoral degree at Columbia University. The years moved by quickly, and the Zins had a great job opportunity offered to them. Howard was offered a tenured teaching position at Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. You all know Spelman? It's the premier black female college in the country, I guess. Still considered that, huh? So I think. Anyway, Zin was offered the chairmanship of the history department. Among his many students there was Marion Wright Edelman, Alice Walker, and Bernice Reagan Johnson Reagan. Howard touched the lives of so many. What he also found, besides the great work that he had at hand, was that this quiet, orderly college community of mostly middle-class Negroes had a social order that was brewing out of control. Students would come to the Zin household to use their typewriter, to talk, to eat food that they had never tasted before. More importantly, they wanted to talk progressive politics with the Zins. One of these conversations ended up with Howard going to attend a rally with some of his students. Minutes before the rally, he spoke with a newspaper reporter. In this event, 77 students from the Atlanta area showed up. 14 of them were Howard Spelman students. A newspaper article was written for the Nation, and Zin was in trouble. You see, that quiet, mostly middle-class Negro college for young ladies was a paragon of towing the line. And the president of that university was angered by Zin's continued agitation and support of the students getting involved in things the president thought would be better left up to the rabble-rousers. Zin, who at 39 had worked hard all his life, was about to lose his job, not because he wasn't a good chair of his history department, not because he wasn't educating those young minds, but because he had not followed the orders of the president of the school. Howard, along with Ella Baker, became student nonviolent coordinating committee members. They were advisors to that important group, and that set the Spelman community into a rage. They ousted Howard Zin. It was nice for me to find out that after many years, that was 1957, that after many years, that was 1963, that after many years, Spelman invited Howard Zin back. The president in 2005 gave Howard Zin a letter of apology and offered him the commencement address that year. and the Zins gladly went back. Zin continued his work with the SNCC after he was removed from Spelman's staff, and he did it from Boston. Boston University had the great insight to hire Professor Zin, Dr. Zin. Zin was also interested in recording history, and he did it in a way few others did during that era. He was able to do extensive interviews with Stokely Carmichael. He took copious notes when speaking with James Baldwin or James Forman. He was so active in all that was going on in the civil rights movement, and I don't know if enough people know. In October 1963, Zin was an observer of the voting registration campaign, documenting everything he could in Mississippi. He wrote a book called Freedom Day, and it's all about what took place in Hattiesburg, January 21st, 1964. Zin traveled to Selma for that final march, Selma to Montgomery in 65. How would Zin, son of Jewish immigrants, became such a mentor and a friend to black empowerment? Zin's teaching continued in Boston for many years, and as the years went on, he became more and more agitated with the Vietnam War. He became an activist in the anti-war movement. Zin, in 1966, made a two-week lecture tour to Japan. And he said, after my trip to Japan, I continued to speak out against the war all over the country at teach-ins, rallies, and debates. He said, I was becoming frustrated that no major political figure of that time, no leading periodical, no published book was out and about that would help change the minds of the American populace. Most Americans, as you remember, were in favor of the Vietnam War, unfortunately, in the early years of the war. In 1968, Zin traveled with Reverend Daniel Berrigan to Hanoi to receive prisoners released by the North Vietnamese. He wrote Disobedience and Democracy, Nine Fallacies of Law and Order in 1968 to counteract what he thought was a dearth of decent and good information about what had really taken place. You know, Zin's presence at Boston University was beginning to infuriate the president there as well. The president was a man named John Silber. He was a political conservative. Zin twice had to, he attempted coups on the president at BU. He got faculty to vote to oust Silber. Silber returned the favor saying the professor was a sterling example of those who would poison the well of the academy. You see, a truth teller is never welcome. Zin retired in 1988 from his professorial career, concluding his last class early so he could join a picket line at the BU School of Nursing. He invited his students to join him. In recent years, there have been more memorials of Howard Zin around the country than for any other single educator. Students around the nation always take to him. Howard Zin is such an amazing soul, and he touched my life, as I alluded to, but I'll tell you the most profound thing about what Zin did for me. In 1985, I was teaching history at Park West High School in New York City, and I was able to use a people's history as my text, and it really was transformative for the students. Nobody, including myself, had ever been exposed to an American history text that gave voice to slaves and Native Americans and Chinese immigrants. I had never been exposed to anything like it. It brought history to life for students who thought history was only written by the victors, that being white Anglo-Saxons. It brought more than history to life for them. Several of my students went on to college and to major in history and American history because of that simple beginning, opening a text that seemed fair, seemed reasonable, seemed closer to the truth than anything they had ever experienced before. I could go on and tell you more about that, but I wanted to touch on the fact that Zinn is also a playwright. His writing touched so many, and he wrote dozens of influential books and articles. His last article that he wrote before he died was a critical assessment of President Obama for The Nation. I'm quoting him here. He said, "I've been searching hard for highlights." Lots of us are searching and wondering. Howard Zinn spoke at countless political rallies and forums. Some of these talks have been corrected in Howard Zinn Speaks. His analysis and his wit can also be heard online and in video interviews. Zinn has a web page. You can go on the internet and fill yourself with Howard Zinn lectures, articles, poignant quotes and statements. Howard Zinn. In 2007, Howard Zinn had to cut back his efforts for a time. Rosalind had been diagnosed with cancer, and she passed away in 2008. His beautiful wife, a painter, a teacher, and an editor, she was deeply admired by all who met her. And Zinn noted after her death, "Roz was a more rounded person than I was. She didn't just love music, she played music. She didn't just appreciate art, she was a painter. She loved flowers and she planted them. She loved theater and took to the stage. She loved the sea and swam in it, even in the coldest waters. She loved literature and was always reading. I had total faith in her literary sensibilities, so she was the only one who read my writings before I gave them to the publishers. She would undoubtedly suggest that I shorten every single work. She loved people, and they loved her instantly." After pulling himself together after losing his beloved Rosalind, Howard Zinn continued his activism, speaking at rallies, conducting interviews, and paying particular attention to students and teachers. In 2008, he introduced a former student to two education groups to launch the Zinn Education Project, bringing resources for teaching people's history to kindergarten through 12th grade classrooms. In the fall of 2008, he was the keynote speaker at the National Council for Social Studies Conference, and he really stressed the need for the community that people work in, the schools and the school boards and all the education people, anybody interested in education, fight for good textbooks in the classroom. There's a dearth of good textbooks in our classrooms. Some schools don't even have textbooks anymore. It's critical that students be able to read things that can open their eyes. Throughout his life, Howard Zinn responded to the letters he had received from all over the world. A New York University student reviewing his archived letters at the library made note of the extensive correspondence he had with people who were incarcerated. Howard Zinn didn't just work with those liberals or those progressives who were on the cutting edge. Howard Zinn was a man of the people. Howard Zinn left us in January of 2010. He had a heart attack in Santa Monica. He was there preparing for a lecture. There was an outpouring of tributes from around the world and even public events to commemorate his life and legacy. Howard Zinn's life influences countless millions. His actions and his deeds spoke loud and clear. He ended his autobiography with these encouraging words, and I share them with you now. We don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an endless succession of presents. And to live now as we think humans should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, this is itself a marvelous victory. Howard Zinn, a man of America. Howard Zinn, a man of the world. Howard Zinn, a man we should remember. Amen. Thank you.